Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
And welcome, everybody, to another live installment of the award-winning political cesspool radio program. It's a holiday edition of TPC. Welcome, once again, one and all. It is Saturday evening, May 28th. It's Memorial Day weekend, and yet still here we are, bringing the program to you without retreat, surrender, or apology, even on a weekend when most mere mortals would have taken off. I'm your host, James Edwards. To my right, literally and figuratively, is Keith Alexander, my co-host, and we are philosophically the whole way, any way you want it. Keith Alexander, to my right, co-hosting with me this evening as we broadcast live from AM 1380 WLRM Radio in downtown Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network, and of course, simulcasting online to a worldwide audience at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. I had an opportunity to go up to Nashville a couple of days ago for a politically related business trip, if you will, and I met with a couple of young fans of the show, so I want to say hello to the two of them. You know who you are. And we had a very good evening in the hotel lobby that I was staying at, commiserating and actually working on a little project for the cesspool itself. So I want to thank those guys up in Nashville for giving me their company while I was out of town for a brief one-night trip. And then I come back down here, you know, Keith, yesterday, and I walk into the radio station, and, you know, as a man, I'm very proud of the work that we do on this show. I mean, people would think that just sitting here in the studio and hosting the radio show wouldn't really be too exerting, but they would be wrong. I mean, more oftentimes than not, we leave the studio sweating. We always leave a bit of our soul here in the studios as well. And therefore, you know, when we're at the top of each hour and we take a break, we go and stretch our legs in the green room, or we get a glass of water from the refrigerator here in the studio, and we come back and or at the station, then when we come back into the broadcast studio, you know, it smells like a locker room. You know, because we get worked up here. It gets physical in here hosting this show. And then, you know, I come back from out of town, and all throughout the radio station here, the staff has implemented these little Glade plug-in deals. And they're all over the radio station, and they're all differently scented. The one up front in the lobby has sort of a citrusy smell. And the one back here, I think, is lilacs. And so, I don't know, Keith, what do you make of it? Walking back into our stomping grounds, the man cave, the studio here, and having it smell like lilacs and lavender.
Well, you know, there are a lot of ways you can take this. I'm not going to take it as an insult to, you know, because we all shower on a regular basis around here. But somebody who did this, I tell you what, it's the perfume smell is hard to get used to. But, again, we're kicking off another episode of the political cesspool that is going to provide you with analysis and commentary that you will not find anywhere else on your AM or FM radio dial anywhere in the United States except here. Now, most of the country has had a kind of low-key celebration of the Brown decision. And, of course, the Brown decision is supposed to be the best thing since floating soap. And that's the way everything comes across. We're about to get hammered again with cultural Marxism regarding Memorial Day. We've seen an ad that is coming out for one of the airlines that is absolutely incredible. The way that they're trying to spin this thing so that it supports multiculturalism and liberalism generally is just jaw-dropping. And then today I also heard on the radio a commercial for a PBS show on the Gettysburg Battle that is coming out. And in this commercial it says that it was the largest battle ever to take place on American soil. Two great armies clashed, and 3 days later One Nation emerged. Again, I just can't wait to see this propaganda piece that is being served up by PBS. But let's address that very quickly. The first thing is, no, One Nation did not emerge. We are still two nations now as we were then. Have you ever heard of Red State and Blue State America? That's the same fissure that existed back in the 1860s during the Civil War and for the 30 or more years before the Civil War. And there's just a difference in mores, a difference in ethical values, a difference in political and ideological values that is constantly coming to the fore and doesn't seem to change with the passage of time, James. And, you know, the left can ignore this as much as they want to, but the fact that there is still a red state America, a part of America that is resisting, even though ineffectively, the constant drift towards the left that we see in American politics and in American life generally shows you that basically the Civil War didn't solve a darn thing.
Keith, I too was watching the History Channel today and saw a preview for the program that you were just referencing. It's obviously a documentary on Gettysburg. And not only did, as they say, one army emerge, they emerged and thankfully won the soul of the nation and so on and so forth. It's really bad out there, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, if you rely on the mainstream media to provide you with your daily bread. If you're not listening to the political cesspool, you're going to be all messed up in the mind. But I was watching, and I'm going to have a article about this or a post on the Political Cesspool's blog, thepoliticalcesspool.org, on Monday in honor of Memorial Day. But, and I'll tell you a little bit more about it during tonight's third hour. But basically, I was watching a series on the History Channel earlier this morning before preparing for the program and coming down here to the radio station. It was entitled, and it's one that they've repeated several times, America, the Story of Us. And Keith, to say the least, and I know I was talking with you about this a few minutes ago before we went on air, I learned all sorts of new and interesting things about this country that I had never heard before in all my born years, 30 years on life. And thankfully, the History Channel is now providing me with is just incredible information about the true history, quote unquote, of our country. It's just been unearthed. You know, thankfully, the crack team at the History Channel was able to find this after all these long years. And in addition to that, which again, I'll provide more information on during the third hour of tonight's program, I saw an absolutely incredible commercial, an American Airlines commercial that they're obviously airing in conjunction with the Memorial Day holiday and festivities. You can watch the commercial for yourself on Monday by visiting our website, but you're going to hear a little bit more about it tonight during the third hour. But that's not all. We have a very jammed, packed show for you this evening. Political Cesspool co-host Bill Rowland will be with us during tonight's second hour to provide us with inside information on a very big story that is happening right here in town, right here in Memphis, and it's something that every member of our listening audience should be aware about and should be knowledgeable of. So leave it to Political Cesspool co-host Bill Rowland to fill you in on those details a little bit later on. And then, of course,
jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. I got a little bit so excited about what's forthcoming here in tonight's broadcast that I forgot to look at the clock and ran smack dab into a commercial break without wrapping up my train of thought. But just to recap very quickly, Bill Rowland on during tonight's second hour. I've got a lot of news for you, including some of the things we saw on the History Channel today during the third hour. But when Bill comes on in the second hour, he's going to be providing you with inside information about a story taking place here in Memphis that all of our listeners should be aware of. Basically, what's going on is a local hospital here in town has taken a Confederate flag away from a 92-year-old Korean War veteran. This fellow's in the hospital. hospital. He had a small tabletop Confederate flag by his hospital bed, and the hospital confiscated it. We have got, and this has been making the news here on the local TV affiliates, and Bill Rowland, Political Cesspool co-host, has inside information about this story, and we're going to be dedicating a large part of tonight's second hour to that. Lots of interesting facets, and we will be exploring them all. But first, Keith Alexander is loaded and ready to unload right now.
Thank you, James. When we have a news article like this, Memphis Veterans Hospital taking down the Confederate flag in a veteran's room type of story, it's always helpful, I think, to track things back to their source. And the source, basically, of what ails America and what is causing manifestations like this particular indignity, an old man's last days in the hospital are being disrupted because of political correctness, and he's being, denied his constitutional rights. What is behind all of this? Well, we were talking about the Brown decision and how countless hosannas are sung to this every year in May. It was a decision reached on May the 17th, 1954, and supposedly it's the best thing since sliced bread. But actually, it's the greatest calamity to befall America in the 20th century, and we're still experiencing the fallout. In fact, we're in an ever-increasing and powerful vortex that is dragging America down to the bottom from being at the top, which is where we were on May the 17th of 1954. Right after World War II, in this post-war era, up until May 17th, 1954, America manufactured 96% of the goods that we consumed. Today, manufacturing is down to 9% of our domestic gross domestic product. Now, this is a calamity, because if you don't manufacture anything, you're not producing wealth. What we're doing as a nation now is we're selling off capital assets to maintain current levels of consumption. And of course, you can't do that forever. Just like a kid playing Monopoly can't continue to sell off his hotels and houses and continue to go around the board. When you start having to do that, then you know you're not in the game much longer. Every kid that ever played Monopoly knows that. Well, that's where America is now. Now, what are the two biggest consequences of the Brown decision? Long-term, here, boots on the ground in America today. Well, the first is the destruction of quality public education in America. That's the number one result. The second result is the decline of America's cities. The third result is the corruption of America's judicial system and law. Now let's go into each one of these in some detail. The destruction of public education. On May the 17th of 1954, American public education was near the very top in terms of quality and attainment and achievement among first world nations. We were very concerned in 1957 when the Soviets got a launched manned spacecraft up before we did, Sputnik. But nonetheless, almost everybody would tell you at that time that America was technologically superior and economically more powerful than any other nation in the world, hands down. As you can see from that last segment that I was just giving you, things have changed and changed drastically. By the year 2016, Red China is supposed to overtake us. Now, all of this can be tracked back to the Brown decision and the destruction of quality public education in America. If you live in an urban center like Memphis or any other part of America that has a substantial minority population, you know what school integration has done to the quality of public school education. Basically, it's destroyed it. It has caused, what has happened is exactly what all of the critics of Brown at the time it was decided predicted was going to happen to American education. The quality has gone way down. You now have to have black teachers. You have to have black students. You've had assignments to school based on race. And as a result, white people didn't want to subject their children to an inferior educational environment and saddle them for the rest of their lives with the consequences of an inferior education. So they started taking their children out of the public schools like they did in Memphis and put them into private schools. Now, one of the big results of that decision is the decline in the percentage of white people in America. And here's the link. The link is this, precisely. If you have to suddenly start paying high tuition prices to get your children educated from kindergarten all the way through high school, people who are prudent, people who have discretion and have a sense of responsibility, have fewer children. Otherwise, what are you going to do? You're going to start having children like you did back when public education was both high quality and too free for you. Now, let's say you can afford to send two children to private school. What are you going to tell the third child when that child comes along? Well, we're sorry, dear. We just ran out of money. You're going to have to go down here to this ghetto school with low standards and violence and everything else. We hope you make it back in time. No, you're not. You're going to try to find some way to get that extra child an education. And, of course, all of this coincided with the advent of Dr. Rock's pill, the birth control pill, and legalized abortion. And as a result of this kind of pernicious mixture, the white population has shrunk from being 90% of the total population of the United States, which is what it was in 1960, to now two-thirds and shrinking. In fact, it's shrinking so quickly now with the advent of another liberal innovation called illegal immigration and open borders. They're trying to swamp us with non-whites in America now. What is happening is that by the year 2042, we're supposed to have a minority status for whites in America, all the way down from 90% in 1960 to 49% in 2042. And I predict, James, that when whites become a minority in America, minority rights will be a thing of the past. Now, our educational system is gone down, but we insist through affirmative action and otherwise that blacks be raised up and have at least proportional representation in many government jobs, far beyond proportional representation in top flight positions that pay a lot of money, have a lot of authority, and that also is contributing to the decline of America. We'll get back to the decline of American cities after this break.
As Keith said, we've got to take a commercial break, but don't go anywhere. There is still much more political cesspool forthcoming. We're just getting started on this Memorial Day edition of TPC. Stay tuned. If you knew
Peggy Sue, then don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Peggy Sue. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta
get out of this place. All right, everybody. Is everybody having a good Memorial Day weekend so far? We thank you for making our weekly program a part of your family festivities this weekend, and we do hope that each and every one of you have a safe, enjoyable, familial Memorial Day weekend. My wife and I just not long before had to be down here for the show tonight. We're spending some time with family and friends over and having a little pool party. We're going to be doing something over here at our house on Monday for even closer members of the family. So it's always a good opportunity to take advantage of a holiday like this, a little bit longer weekend, and spend it with the people you love, Keith.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why I'm here with you working tonight.
That's right. Yeah, this is like family, I'll tell you. And that's not an exaggeration by any stretch of the imagination, I can tell you that. Now, just to wrap up the destruction of quality public education in America, the left, the elites, are constantly trying to thrust more and more minorities our way. Just like Bertolt Brecht, the German communist playwright, said in the late 1940s, if you don't like the results of the election, change the electorate. That's what they're in the process of doing through the open borders policy. They didn't find a way that they could get a large number of blacks imported into America, although they seem to roll out the red carpet for every Haitian that wants to come to America now. Plus, they're bringing people from places like Somalia to America. But, of course, the greatest number of third worlders they can send to America come from Latin America, Central America and South America. And, of course, they have done their very best to leave that border wide open. And the result is this decline in the percentage of the white population of America. And it's not a coincidence and it's not an accident, people. Now, the destruction of quality public education, think of it in these terms. Think about a school in 1954 that was a top-achieving high school, like Central High in Memphis, East High School in Memphis. Now compare the standardized test scores coming out of the senior class of those schools back in 1954 when the Brown case was decided with today. There's no comparison. This education change has been a disaster for America, and it has coincided with the decline of America as a power. We are living on fumes right now. We're moving on fumes in the gas tank, and the fumes will be gone shortly, and we're going to be going, you know, into third world status, because as James and the rest of us at the cesspool have said often enough, you can't have a first world nation with a third world population, and the elites are intent upon giving us a third world population. Now, the second big legacy of the Brown decision is the decline of American cities. And for this, look no further than the city of Detroit, which was just a dynamo of energy and economic vitality in 1950. The headquarters of the American automobile industry. Now it is in decline. They've lost almost 500,000 people in that city. You have whole sections of the city that basically the city itself is trying to disown and to do the opposite of annexation. They're trying to cut them off so they don't have to provide city services. There is not one single national grocery chain that has a store within the city limits of Detroit. Detroit has become synonymous with the type of decline that we used to associate solely with a place like Haiti, but of course there's a relationship there. When the white people leave, prosperity isn't far behind. And of course we're right on the cusp of that type of change here in Memphis. And again, the left can never leave well enough alone. They're trying to do away with the safe haven in the Shelby County school system that a lot of white parents kept white parents in Shelby County, which is the county that Memphis is in. And they're also trying to pass a payroll tax, which will shift, which is another word for a local income tax. And if they can do that, if they can accomplish that, they're going to shift more and more of the tax burden onto the white population and take what little is left on the black population away from it. And that will put the final nail in the coffin. We're going to see the decline of Memphis, and basically with the demographic change that we've already talked about, with the increasing shrinking of the white population in America, you're going to see more and more places in America become like Memphis, and then like Detroit, like Oakland, California, like Camden, New Jersey, like East St. Louis, Illinois, like Birmingham, Alabama. You know, Camden, New Jersey was the first major American city to have a black mayor. And when he was being inaugurated, he said on national TV, I don't know where America is going, but Camden's going to get there first. And he was prophetic. If you look in the news or Google up Camden, New Jersey, they recently closed down their last public library. there is a whole list of crimes that their police force will not even respond to. They have don't have the money because they've succeeded in the natural consequence of their liberal actions, which is to drive the white population out. And when the white population is out, there is no group to leech off of to get money to run the place the way that they want to run it. And as a result, the whole thing starts to turn third world, just like Detroit has. Now, this is happening throughout America. It's not regional. You know, Oakland is in California. East St. Louis is in the Midwest. Detroit is in the upper Midwest. Their place, Camden, New Jersey, is on the Atlantic seaboard. Birmingham, Alabama, is in the South. This is the future of America. And if you want to look at a grim future, visit those cities. Now, the decline of American cities is a calamity because it's, and it leads to things like two articles that I have found in the Memphis Commercial Appeal recently. One was about corruption in the Chancery Court Clerk's office, where you now you get a black head put in there by a majority vote of the three chancellors that they have. And the first thing he did was have, well, let's just go right to this story. All of the white employees of the Chancery Court Clerk's office started to get run out. They were made to walk the plank, and of course they were replaced by black people. One of these black replacements for the people that had been there for ages was a fellow named Brandon Gunn, and he is now being charged with having a scheme where he's been siphoning off money from the Chancery Clerk's office treasury. The Chancery Court does a lot of foreclosures and gets a lot of money in from foreclosure judicial sales. And he set up a sham corporation and started writing checks to that corporation. Of course, he's the only person that has anything to do with that, so the money was going to his pocket, apparently, or at least that's the accusation. But see, this is the boots on the ground, real world consequence of this type of takeover. When the white people leave, black people gain political power, and they have no compunction whatsoever about getting all the good jobs for quote unquote their people. As I heard a black activist say one time, they prefer the brother man over the other man. And they get them in, and then, lo and behold, what a surprise, you have third world corruption because you have third world people in charge of your city. Now, another article is in today's Commercial Appeal. Teller convicted of robbery faces 6 to 12 years in prison for facilitation of an 09 crime. A bank teller was convicted Friday night of helping set up an $82,000 robbery of an elderly customer, white, 2 years ago. The criminal court jury rejected the testimony of defendant Lakeisha Thomas, black, and returned a guilty verdict for facilitation of committing robbery and facilitation to commit theft of property over $60,000, both felonies. She'll be sentenced on June the 24th by Judge James Beasley Jr. She faces 3 to 6 years on each count. And here's what happened. An older man named Heflin told this particular teller that he was going to take money out, cashing in CDs worth $207,000, because he was concerned about the state of the economy. This teller tells her husband, who has a rap sheet as long as your arm, and he tells some Confederates of his, some friends, and they go out and rob this guy at his house and take $82,000, which apparently is all they could find there. This is what happens through affirmative action as you start promoting people into positions that they really wouldn't deserve on an objective basis, James.
We're going to let Keith cool down, everybody, just like any fine automobile. The man is susceptible to overheat. We're going to let him get a drink of water. He's going to be back to close up this first hour right after this, but still two more hours forthcoming, and they're going to be very, very good. So stay tuned. We'll see you in a second.
Place. Girl, there's a better life for me.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
You know, I'm sitting here in the studio tonight punching the clock, doing the job, and I'm thinking about all the fans we have across the country, Keith, with us on their portable radios outside and listening as they grill a burger, you know, put a steak on the grill. Listen, I love it. It's a beautiful sight. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, a little later on in the program during tonight's third hour, I'm going to be covering for you a variety of stories that we have documented on our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, over the course of the last 7 days. And I will also be reporting to you some of the amazing things that I learned from the History Channel this morning. You're not going to want to miss that. During the second hour, which is coming up in just a few minutes, Bill Rowland, TPC co-host, will be joining me to talk about the big story here in town, how a Memphis hospital took away the Confederate flag that a 92-year-old Korean War veteran was keeping by his bedside. That's a big story, and we've got inside information on it coming up at the top of the next hour. But first, you know, people say that, you know, it's hard to believe in miracles, but to me, I hope I'm not being too simple. Everything is a miracle. And when we came in this studio today, it's 100 degrees outside. It was 62 degrees when I got home from Nashville yesterday, late morning. It's 100 outside right now. When we got into the studio tonight, they had the air fresheners plugged in, but they sure didn't have the air conditioner on, and it was hot. But now it's nice and cool, so I marvel at how an air conditioning works. When I go home and I have the garage door opener, and I just push this little button in this small little box, and my garage door magically opens. When I use a cell phone and I call Keith to ask him what we're going to be talking about tonight during the first hour, I'm amazed at how all that works. And then you look around, and our culture, our history, our brilliance is always under attack. I think Bell South, you know, has a black CEO or a black president now. You know, if we were waiting on them to create and understand telecommunications, then we'd never have it. And of course, their crutch is, well, it was because of slavery in America that, you know, the black civilization has never accomplished anything. It's because of the couple of hundred years the United States of America had slavery that all of the, you know, millions of Africans who are still in Africa have never accomplished anything. It was all because of American slavery. That, you know, that's it. Now, you know, again, if you watch the History Channel, you'll understand that they certainly have their heroes, people like Harriet Tubman. And I'm not going to denigrate it. I mean, you know, it took some courage to do what she did, run around in the woods at night. I mean, there could have been snakes out there, and she could have fallen over a log or something like that. And I'm not saying it didn't take a little bit of courage to do what she did, but all of their heroes are activists. All of them are activists. Yeah, right. As Keith said, interested in destroying Western civilization. But, you know, I look around, and to me, our people themselves are a miracle and something certainly worthy to be proud of. And that's something I want you to remember, not just this Memorial Day, but always. Be proud of who you are, ladies and gentlemen. There's much to be proud of there. And that's your public service announcement from the political cesspool. God knows the only mainstream media entity that's going to tell you to be proud in who you are and be talking directly to European Americans.
Well, enjoy that air conditioning while you can, James, because there's not a whole lot of air conditioning down in Haiti now. Even though it's all over the place in areas where white people predominate.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing, just to wrap this up, because I know you got some more material to cover, Keith. Air conditioning, cars, you name it, any technological advancement, it came from our minds, and it's not just for our enjoyment or our benefit. It's for the benefit of all mankind, and all we hear are the grievances about what white people have done to non-whites, never the gratitude. And frankly, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sick of it. Medical technology, transportation advancement, all of it is ours. It's enjoyed by everyone, and yet all you ever hear attributed to whites is hatred and slavery. And, you know, it's time that everyone follow our lead and put a foot down to it.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I have here in front of me a text of President Obama's speech to the Booker T. Washington High School graduating class a week ago here in Memphis.
Remind them that we covered that.
And we covered that last week, and let me just make this comment. Listen to this. Here is Obama's words themselves. Everybody here has got a unique story like that to tell. Each of you knows what it took for you to get here. But in reaching this milestone, there is a common lesson shared by every graduate in this hall. And Chris said it himself in a recent interview. It's not where you are or what you are, it's who you are. Yes, you're from South Memphis. Yes, you've always been underdogs. Nobody has handed you a thing. But that does not mean that whatever you accomplish in your life, you will have earned it. Whatever rewards and, what is this word, joys you reap, you'll appreciate them that much more because you will have come through, they will have come through your own sweat and tears, products of your own effort and your own talents. Now, this is a big lie that would have put the Big Brother government of George Orwell's 1984 to shame. Every one of these kids relied on the government for the roof over their head, the food in their mouths, the clothes on their back, their health care. They achieved what they achieved through elaborate tutoring provided by white charities for the most part. But they're made to believe that they don't owe anybody anything. They did this all on themselves. See, this is how an entitlement, how a gift becomes an entitlement, James. This is what the way that these people are being basically psychologically engineered to think that anything they accomplish in life, they've accomplished on by the sweat of their brow and on their own efforts, when actually they're the beneficiaries of affirmative action throughout everything in their life. You know, everything that is provided for them has been provided by someone else, but they're led to believe they did it all themselves. Now, getting back to the Brown decision, the decline of American cities is not something that's gone unnoticed in conservative quarters. That's why you're hearing all this hubbub at the present time about government employee unions and how we need to trim them back and how we need to get government expenses under control. And of course, all of the conservatives, mainstream conservatives, don't want you to make a connection between this and race. But of course, black people and their leaders know exactly what's at stake here. They know that black people are disproportionately represented in the ranks of government employees. Go to the post office, for heaven's sakes, and look around you. This is, and they realize that any attempt to cut back on collective bargaining rights or on the numbers of employees in the government is something that is going to disproportionately cause problems for them. Of course, Henry Loeb was absolutely right back in 1968 when he opposed the Memphis sanitation workers' strike on precisely that basis. He said that government employee unions are a bad idea and that they the public is much too vulnerable to work stoppages. Furthermore, the government can't go broke and there's too much of a temptation for government officials to sell out, get votes from the people that work for the government employee unions, and then 25 years later when all these pensions start coming due, they're going to be in Tahiti or in Hawaii or somewhere else and won't have to deal with the chickens that come home to roost. Well, this is all, again, a result of the Brown decision. The decline of America's cities is caused by this incredible tax burden, and what happens when the white people leave, there's no longer anybody pulling the wagon. You've got all these other people riding in the wagon, and there's nobody to pull it, so the city starts to go down, and of course, they're sending out an SOS to the federal government to bail them out. Now, the third lasting legacy of the Brown decision is the corruption of the judicial system. And for this, we can turn to no greater an authority than the late, great Sam Francis, who wrote this op-ed piece on May the 17th, 2004. 50 years of Brown blunder. Ruling class learns nothing. I confess that I have not read and have no intention of reading any of the endless buckets of bills that have been spilled on op-ed pages in recent days about the glories of Brown versus Board of Education decision, the 50th anniversary of which is upon us this week. And he says, for every one of the countless hosannas sung to what was probably the most dangerous and destructive Supreme Court decision in American history, there is a good reason to condemn Brown and the men who delivered it. In many ways, Brown has served as a model by which the court has gutted every state and local statute, no matter how long-standing or popular, that wanders into its crosshairs. The state segregation laws at which Brown aimed were merely the first and easiest targets of the new doctrine, but the court, emboldened by the act of usurpation it had pulled off, soon hunted down others. In the Miranda and Escobedo rulings of the 1960s, which gutted state and local law enforcement powers, decisions banning school prayer, the erasure of state and local laws against sedition and obscenity, capital punishment statutes, laws governing sexual morals, and of course, Roe v. Wade ruling of 73, which legalized abortion. There would have been none of these without Brown. This is merely a partial list of the tyranny that the court succeeded in creating because the American people allowed it to get away with Brown. Okay, James, I could go on and on, but let's turn the mic over to you.
Well, don't worry. Keep will be back next week, and he will continue, ladies and gentlemen. But for now, we've got two more hours right around the corner. So take a break and come back with us in just a few minutes. We'll be here for tonight's second hour.
In the First Baptist Church, in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula, it was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting,
hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his Fruit of the Looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.